tiny gray dot appeared in front of the Awakening. In an eye blink, it expanded into the gray oblong lump of one of ship's force-hurled stones. Fighting the urge to dodge, a mistake that might well have carried them across a nearby event horizon, Jaina held the pinnace steady and thumbed the intercom pad on her control yoke. Brace for impact back there! This one is gonna take down our shields!
Luke rose out of his body with a jolt, then hung floating above it, staring at the underside of the bunk above. A week passed, or maybe it was a second. He had no idea. Time had no existence outside the body. A heartbeat lasted a week. A lifetime flashed by in an instant. But Luke Skywalker remained, a manifestation of Force essence that embodied mind and form, more real than the material husk he had left strapped in the bunk below. He exhaled, or imagined himself exhaling, and his connection to his body grew more tenuous. There is no life. There is only the Force. It was the code of the Mindwalkers, an assertion that the corporeal was an illusion, that a living being was nothing but a luminous swirl in the Force. And perhaps they were right. Luke exhaled again, and a purple radiance appeared above, shining down through the crude matter of the upper bunk as though it were a hologram. He reached, and the light came flooding in, filling him with a calm as deep as space. He became the Force, and the Force became him, and he knew only the pure, eternal joy of existence. Luke called to mind a lake he had once visited, a narrow mountain lake nestled between a granite dome and a boulder-strewn meadow with hummocks of knee-high moss, and he started to walk. Whether the journey took a week or an instant was impossible to say, but then he was there, standing on the shore of the Lake of Apparitions, looking across its still black waters toward the silver mists that concealed the far end. There was no silhouette floating in the fog, no half-hidden woman beckoning him onward. Abeloth was nowhere to be seen. Of course she wasn't. Luke was the one looking for a fight, not Abeloth. She was too busy trying to create her divine family, to transform Ben and Vistara into a twisted version of the son and the daughter who had once kept the balance in the Force. The last thing Abeloth wanted now was to face Luke in a final combat that she just might lose. But the choice wasn't hers. Luke stepped into the water and began to wade forward. He did not make any sloshing sounds or disturb the dark surface as he moved. Soon, the hummocks and boulders along the shore began to cast reflections not of themselves, but of the faces of the dead Wookiees, Barabels, humans, 100 other species. Their eyes all seemed to be watching Luke as he passed, sometimes showing disappointment when his features did not turn out to be those of a loved one, often lighting in recognition and curiosity as they realized they were looking on the Grand Master of the New Jedi Order. Many of the faces Luke saw belonged to old friends. Ganna Rhizode, Numerar, Trissina Lobi, and a dozen others. But he continued by them without pause. During his 4 decades as a Jedi, Luke had lost 100 good friends and more acquaintances than he could count. And he was certain they would understand if he did not have time to stop and greet them all. Finally, he came to the face he had been looking for. A slender female face, framed by auburn hair, with high cheekbones, full lips, and large green eyes. It watched Luke approach with longing and with growing concern. He stopped beside her and squatted on his heels, waiting for her face to float to the surface, wishing that he were not in such desperate need of the help he was about to request. As soon as her face broke the surface, she raised her brow and said,
"We can't keep meeting like this, Skywalker."
Luke smiled despite himself.
"Last time, I promise. Mara, I need your help."
"There's not much I can do for you anymore,"
Mara said, looking more disappointed than sorry.
"You know that."
"Can you help me draw Abeloth out?"
Mara studied him in silence for a moment, then shook her head.
You can't kill her, Luke. She's one of the old ones.
It doesn't matter what she is,
Luke said, more sternly than he had intended.
She's taken Ben.
Mara's eyes went wide, but she said nothing. Instead, it was a scornful voice to Luke's left that spoke.
How did you let that happen?
Luke turned to find Jason Solo's gaunt face peering out of the dark waters.
We were trying to stop the cataclysm you caused.
Jason's lip curled into a sneer.
You Jedi never tire of blaming the Dark Lord for your own failings, do you? My failings have nothing to do with this. You're the one who set Abeloth free. Me? I was dead. The Root says you did it when you changed the future,
Luke explained.
They say that's how Abeloth is always freed.
Jason began to look less certain of himself.
Who's the Root? The oldest Killik Hive,
Luke explained.
The one that helped build Centerpoint Station and imprisoned Abeloth the last time she escaped.
Then you should be talking to the Root, not Mara and me.
There's nothing we can do. We're dead.
Luke turned back to Mara.
I just need to know her weak points, or how to find her in the mists of forgetfulness. Anything that will help me stop her before she does something terrible to Ben.
Mara's eyes grew glassy with sorrow.
Luke, Jason is telling the truth this time. We can't help you.
I can.
It was a voice that Luke felt rather than heard. A darkness that pulled at him from behind.
And I will.
Luke turned to find the form of a shadow-wrapped human approaching from the shore by which Luke had entered the water. The same shore by which all mortals came to the Lake of Apparitions. The silhouette was tall and broad-shouldered, with a head hooded in darkness and glowing eyes that never seemed to match colors, that went from brown to orange and yellow to blue, that sometimes grew dark as ebony and seemed to be not there at all. As the silhouette drew nearer, it began to resemble a man Luke had seen many years before. A man who had appeared only in his dreams, and always shortly before he awoke, feeling uneasy and frightened. Luke glanced back at Mara, then said,
It's him.
Who?
The man I kept seeing in my dreams before Jason turned Sith.
Mara looked confused.
But the man in your dreams was Jason.
I thought so,
Luke replied.
Who else could it have been?
He turned back to the figure and saw that the cloaking shadows had coalesced into a suit of dark, spiked armor. The newcomer's right arm seemed a mere ghost, as though he had only a holographic projection where there should have been a limb. And his left eye had become an empty white circle that looked more like a window into another universe than an actual organ. His face was weathered and chiseled, though with a web of tattoos radiating outward from an angry gaze and a deeply etched scowl, he could not be considered handsome. He stopped 3 paces away and stood staring, as though trying to decide whether to attack Luke or speak to him.
You,
Luke said. It was the man with the tattooed face, the one who had been behind Luke's team in the Minari Heights spaceport, and who had later disarmed Yakiel Savitu near Fellowship Plaza.
Who are you?
No one whose help you want,
Jason said.
That's the dark man I saw on the throne of balance.
And the only one who can help you,
the stranger said.
With the ones gone, there is only one way to stop Abeloth. Jedi and Sith together.
Luke studied the stranger without answering for a moment, trying to imagine him without the scowl. The man was hardly ugly, but he certainly did not share the Lost Tribe's usual obsession with careful grooming and good looks. And the tattoos were unusual, too. Vistara had claimed that while the Lost Tribe enjoyed painting their bodies with decorative or shandy markings, they would never defile themselves with permanent ink. Of course, she might have been lying. It certainly wouldn't have been the only time, but Luke couldn't see how that would have benefited her. At last, Luke said,
I recognize your face.
You've been watching the fight on Coruscant.
And that surprises you. What happens on Coruscant shapes the fate of the entire galaxy. Of course we are watching. We are always watching.
Which is how you know so much about Abeloth,
Luke surmised.
You have a spy.
What makes you think there is only one? We Sith are legion, as you now know.
Luke shook his head.
If you were Lost Tribe, your appearance would be more refined, and you wouldn't have tattoos.
Too much talk, Master Skywalker,
the stranger said, stepping past Luke.
I came to fight. Let us find her.
Luke turned to follow, and there she was, a gray silhouette just emerging from the mists of forgetfulness. Her long saffron hair cascading almost down to the water. Her tiny pinpoint eyes shining out of sockets as deep as wells. Luke's hand dropped to his hip, automatically reaching for a lightsaber that did not exist beyond shadows. He tried to continue the motion and bring it up to deliver a blast of force energy, but Abeloth had already launched her own attack by then, delivering a bolt of force lightning that blasted straight through the stranger into Luke. He felt himself fly backward, consumed by pain, his entire being a column of blue, crackling force flame. What Saba felt in the Force was not exactly a go command. It was a blast of fiery anguish so intense that it lifted her scales and made her fear for Master Skywalker. Still, the message was clear. The hunt was over, and the kill was at hand, even if the prey had drawn first blood. Saba leaned forward and peered around the corner, looking up a dark, dead-end corridor toward the computer core. To her Barabel eyes, which could see well into the infrared spectrum, the passage was a long, rectangular tube of cool blue walls ending in the orange glow of the computer core airlock. A couple dozen green lumps lay scattered along the floor, Sith bodies that had been dead long enough to start cooling. Satisfied that nothing had changed since their initial assault here, Saba pulled her head back and turned to look at the survivors of her own pack. Tahiri had obviously sensed the change in Saba's disposition and alerted the four void jumpers. They had all pulled their thermal imaging goggles over their eyes, and they were looking in Saba's direction. 5 survivors out of an original pack of 15. The battle to blind Abeloth and cut her power feeds had been as bloody as it was long. The void jumpers had lost all of their infiltrators, both snipers and tech sergeants, and one of the demolition men. But Olazan was still leading the void jumpers and in good health, as were both of the power armor stompers. The surviving demolition man had lost one leg below the knee, but he had still been able to rig enough chain explosives and instruct others in strategic placement on adjacent levels to prevent Sith reinforcements from reaching the final staging area. It was still a good pack. Saba dipped her chin in a curt nod. Her companions, save for Bronn, the injured demolition man, rose to their feet and brought their weapons to the ready. Olazan spoke into his throat mic, and Stomper 1 stepped into the middle of the formation. In his suit mandibles, he held an oblong orb that was about a meter in length. On top was a covered activation pad with a digital counter that read 005000. Saba bared her fangs in approval.
It is time to deliver our egg to its nest, she said. May the Force be with you.
Thanks.
Olazan disengaged the firing safety on his shattergun.
You too.
He started to step forward to lead the way around the corner, but stopped when Tahiri used the Force to pull him back and wagged a finger in his direction.
Where are your manners, Sergeant Major?
She ignited her lightsaber and stepped to Saba's side.
Ladies first.
Saba sissed at the joke and ignited her own blade, then charged around the corner into a corridor filled with the red eyes of Sith shadow ghouls. If anything, the steam had grown thicker. Ben was only 5 meters from the font of power, and he could tell its location only by the sound of its gurgling waters. Even Vistara, standing halfway between him and the fountain, looked more like a gray foreshadow than the woman he loved.
Thess, we're not drinking, Ben said. You saw what happened to Talon after he fell into the pool. The same thing or something even worse will happen to us if we drink from the font. You know that.
Maybe we're meant to change,
Vistara said.
Abeloth is the destroyer of Kashiri legend, and we're the protectors, Ben. You and me. That's why the Force brought us together in the first place. We're the only ones who can stop her.
Ben shook his head.
Not by drinking from the font.
He stepped closer to Vistara and pointed toward the fountain behind her.
That thing is a dark side nexus, probably the most potent one in the entire galaxy. You don't use something that powerful. It uses you.
So instead we let Abeloth just take us?
Vistara countered.
Use our bodies to raise the galaxy?
No, Vess.
We fight back, Ben said.
But we do it without drawing on the font, without touching the dark side at all. That's the only way we don't become the thing we're trying to destroy.
Vistara studied Ben with a look that was equal parts pity and admiration, then finally said,
You're a noble fool, Ben.
She turned away and started toward the fountain.
But I'm through discussing this. We can't beat Abeloth without the Fawn's power.
Ben remained where he was.
And you can't beat her alone, Vess.
He waited for her to glance back, or at least to hesitate. When she didn't, he turned away. Straight into Abeloth. Her tentacles were on him before he could cry out, entwining his body and pulling him close, slithering over his eyes and probing at his ears, sliding past his lips and into his mouth. Ben bit down hard and felt a gristly tip about the size of his small finger come off. Immediately, his mouth was filled with a thin, foul-tasting oil. He exhaled fiercely, spewing both the tentacle tip and the rancid blood into Abeloth's bottomless eye sockets. She only pulled him closer. A tentacle curled around the back of his neck, then slithered into his nose and started to ascend. He punched and kicked, slamming fists and elbows into her body and stomping at her legs, driving knees into her thighs and abdomen. But he was still too close to the font to use the force. And without the force, his blows were nothing to her. Abeloth took them all without flinching or groaning, with no reaction save a smile. The tentacle wormed its way up Ben's nose into his sinuses, and his face flared with unbearable pressure and pain.
You will drink, young Skywalker, or you will serve me another way. That choice is the only choice.
The threat came to a crashing end, and Abeloth's tentacle tore free as she went flying backward on a bolt of force lightning as thick as Ben's leg. He dropped to his knees, his agony fading quickly. Blood poured from his nose. Abeloth dropped to the ground about 3 meters ahead, limbed in blue and still pinned against the cobblestones by the force lightning. As she writhed, her tentacles were twining around themselves, coalescing back into arms. Her long golden hair grew silky and dark. Her eyes became oblong and normal, and her skin darkened into the lavender tones of a Kashiri Sith. Vistara came up beside Ben. Her hands were still extended toward Abeloth, pouring force lightning into the fallen Kashiri.
Ben, Vistara asked, are you hurt?
Instead of replying, Ben continued to kneel on the cobblestones, looking up at Vistara. Her hair and clothes remained relatively dry, and he saw no redness in her face or hands to suggest she had actually put them into the steaming waters and drunk. But as she continued to pour force lightning into the Kashiri, he could feel the font's dark energy flowing across the courtyard, swirling over him and through him, filling him with the cold, queasy ache of its corrupting power.
Ben?
Vistara asked again.
Answer me! I'm fine, he said. Then get up, Vistara said.
There was a glow in her face, and Ben kept telling himself that it was not joy, that it had to reflect something other than the usual Sith thirst for power.
Together we can kill Abeloth.
Ben spun on his knees and wrapped one arm around Vistara's legs. He rose to his feet, throwing her over his shoulders and using his free hand to catch her forearm and hold her in place.
No!
He started across the courtyard, away from the font of power.
Not like this, we can't!
The white points at the bottom of Abeloth's eyes flared into nests of blue lightning, which kept growing larger and flashing brighter until they finally spilled out of the sockets to engulf her whole head. Luke hurled another blast of force energy in her direction, then braced himself to take the most devastating counterattack yet. The counterattack never came. Instead, the force blast rocked Abeloth up on one leg, where she hung teetering over the lake of apparitions for 1,000 heartbeats. Luke's chest was a searing ache around a fist-sized scorch hole, and his force essence was bleeding out from 12 smaller wounds, leaving a crescent of twinkling light spread across the dark water. He sprang anyway. Abeloth only seemed to sag, and it appeared that she might tumble into the water in the eternity it was taking to reach her. But that would have been too easy. Luke and the Sith Stranger had been hurling force attacks at her for a lifetime. Or perhaps it was a mere eye blink. And this was the first time she had shown any reaction. Then Luke was there, at Abeloth's side, stomp-kicking her legs, knife-handing her throat, grabbing for her head. It was like cotton striking gauze. No popping ligaments or crunching cartilage. Just force essence pushing into force essence. But the damage was done. Luke's foot went through Abeloth's knee. Her leg buckled. His hand sank into her larynx, and she drew back wheezing. He pivoted around behind her, swinging one arm around her shoulder and grabbing for her chin, slipping the other arm up under hers and pressing his wrist into her neck. But grappling was different beyond shadows. There were no pressure points or joint locks or chokeholds, only his presence merging with hers, binding him to her in a writhing knot of energy. Tentacles began to lash at his face, probing for his nose and ears and mouth. A pair of gray tips shot into view, blurring and growing large. Luke closed both eyes and turned away, but not quickly enough. The right eye socket exploded in pain, and everything went dark on that side of his head. The tattooed stranger stepped in from the left, then slid to the front and drove his stiffened fingers deep into the pit of Abeloth's stomach. Black spray erupted from the wound, and she writhed in pain as the stranger probed for something to grab. Abeloth loosed a force blast, trying to drive the stranger off. He held tight. So did Luke, and all three went tumbling across the lake in a snarled mass of limbs and tentacles. Then Luke felt an icy twinge between his shoulder blades. The twinge became a sting, and he began to feel something cold flowing down the center of his back. His first thought was Abeloth, that she had sunken a tentacle into his spine. Until the lashing of her tentacles slowed, and she began to shudder. Luke did not understand until an eternity later, when the stranger rolled up on his feet and jerked them all to a halt. The Sith seemed to be growing stronger as Abeloth grew weaker, and there were wisps of dark fumes swirling off his shoulders and head. It did not take a Jedi Grand Master to understand that Luke was being betrayed by a force-draining technique. Still holding Abeloth tight, Luke shifted his hips, rolling them both onto their sides, and kicked a foot through the stranger's knee. The joint buckled, and the Sith dropped onto the surface of the dark water, still on the opposite side of Abeloth from Luke. "I'll release her," Luke warned.
"Abeloth?"
The stranger shook his head.
"Never."
Despite the Sith's words, the cold stinging inside began to subside, and Luke realized the stranger was not pulling as hard. Abeloth continued to struggle, slipping a pair of tentacles around Luke's throat and trying to tear herself free. But she was growing weak faster than Luke. The draining seemed to continue for days. Then the stranger threw back his head and screamed in anguish, and it suddenly seemed that only a breath had passed. Shiny black force energy began to pour from the Sith's wounds into the lake, spreading outward around them in an oily slick so hot the water began to steam and hiss. Still, the stranger continued to drain Abeloth, and Luke realized that he was not being betrayed. The Sith was suffering as much damage from the attack as was Luke. Abeloth whipped her chin free of Luke's hand, ripping the energy knot where they had joined and sending a sparkling line of both of their force essences splattering across the surface of the lake. She began to roll her head around, gnashing and spitting, trying to sink her fangs into Luke's arm or the stranger's, anything she could reach. Luke slipped his arm down around her throat and pulled hard, merging his form into hers, doing his best to keep her under control. "Keep going," Luke urged the stranger. "Pull harder." The red glow in the eyes of the shadow ghouls faded suddenly to pink, and openings began to appear in their staggered gauntlet formation. Saba sprang into the first gap, holding her ignited lightsaber between her and the nearest ghoul, trying to reach the body to which it was attached by a long, writhing tail. The thing kept trying to slip around the blade's purple-white glow to slash at a head or a shoulder or hip. Saba advanced behind a whirling shield of blocks and slashes, cutting through a shadowy arm here, a leg there, even a neck or body. The pieces dropped away, withering into nothingness before they hit the floor, and the ghoul instantly grew a replacement. Still, the constant hacking was enough to keep the thing from touching Saba, and at last she reached the body itself. She cut the tail free of the corpse's chest, at the same time kneeling down and reaching for its face. As quick as she was, the ghoul had already re-emerged from the corpse. It came diving in at her, sinking two shadowy hands into her thigh. Saba's entire leg went numb, then erupted in icy anguish as the thing's shadowy claws began to slide through her muscle. Saba used two fingers to close the corpse's eyes, then rose hissing and cursing and limped away. Olazan was at her side instantly, hitting the corpse with a blast from his flame gun and incinerating it. As he worked, Tahiri was already leaping past them to wave back the next shadow ghoul. They had tried incinerating the bodies from a distance before closing the eyes, but that had only complicated matters. The shadow ghouls had stayed attached to the scorched remains, and it was impossible to make them go away as long as the eye sockets were uncovered. Once Olazan had finished, his voice came over the reception bud in Saba's ear.
"You're getting quicker. And only one hit that time. You okay?"
Saba put her weight on her aching leg, and when the muscle merely clinched with cold agony and did not collapse, nodded.
"Yes, but this one is not growing quicker. They are growing slower. Keep going."
"You're sure, Master Sebatine?"
This from Stomper 2, also speaking over the comnet.
"I don't like the changes in their eyes, or how their formation has opened up. This feels like a trap."
The Void Jumper's caution was understandable. The pack had advanced only 15 meters, and already they were down to four hunters. A shadow ghoul had gotten inside Stomper 1's power armor and caused it to self-destruct, which was why Stomper 2 was now at the rear of the pack, carrying a badly dented EMP bomb. And no one was quite certain what had become of Braun, the wounded demolition man. A wave of terror had simply rolled through the force from his direction, and then a thermal detonator had gone off. But Saba suggested the change was a good sign. During their strategy meeting on Coruscant, the Jedi had realized it was possible to temporarily weaken at least one of Avaloth's avatars by killing another. Kill one, weaken the others. The theory was that Avaloth had only a single force presence shared by her avatars, so harming any of her avatars would make it easier to defeat all of them. Assuming the Shadow Ghouls were being animated by Avaloth, and Saba saw no other possibility, then they were growing weaker because Luke was succeeding in the Maw. And that made it even more important to succeed here, and to succeed quickly. It would do the galaxy no good to kill Avaloth in the Maw if she survived here. Tahiri dropped to a knee, reaching over to close a corpse's eyes, and a second ghoul drifted over, reaching for her from behind. Saba sprang to her defense, slashing off the thing's shadowy arms, then slipping in to drive it back with a flurry of lightsaber strikes and sweeps. As she fought, Saba sneaked a glance up the corridor. Between the flashing of their lightsabers and the fiery glow of Olazan's flame gun, her infrared vision was completely washed out, and it was impossible to tell how far they still had to go. But the eyes of the ghouls were still visible, and there were at least a dozen pairs glaring out of the darkness ahead. Too many, too long. Saba cut the next shadow ghoul down the center, then left through its coalescing body toward the body to which it was connected. She landed astride its chest, aching and chilled to the bone, and quickly closed its eyelids, then popped a thermal grenade off her harness armed the fuse, and rolled the corpse over on top of it.
Grenade!
She yelled, and leapt at the next set of glowing eyes. The Kashiri was trembling in agony. Greasy, dark smoke was rising from a shoulder that had been so badly scorched, it looked like a burned Nerf roast. Her cheeks were hollow. Her complexion was so wan, it was pale blue. And her sunken eyes were rimmed in red. But she was still standing, coming at them across the courtyard's mossy cobblestones. Even knowing what the woman was, Ben could barely believe his eyes. Vistara had hit her with a bolt of force lightning powerful enough to take out a Candorus-class hover tank. Still, the Avatar had returned to her feet the instant Vistara had been carried too far away from the font of power to continue drawing on its power. And now Vistara was standing at his side, shaking even worse than the Kashiri, her complexion still shadowed by its dark energy, her eyes dulled by force overload. When the Kashiri snatched her lightsaber off its belt hook and ignited its crimson blade, Ben was almost relieved. It was such a mundane threat that it made him think perhaps Vistara's attack had driven out Abeloth after all. Perhaps all they had to fight now was a simple Sith Lord. Then the Kashiri spoke, and his hope evaporated.
We are done with patience. Drink together, or die together.
Ben opened himself to the Force completely, shielding himself from the Font of Power's darkness by drawing its energies through the power of all he loved in the galaxy, through his faith in the Jedi purpose and the promise of the future, through his confidence in Vistara, and the sure knowledge that she would soon join him in the ranks of the Jedi Knights. The Force came pouring into Ben from all sides, irresistible and pure, a flood of light and purpose that no being in the galaxy could deny. He felt himself become the Force, a swirl of power and energy, and he focused all that he was on the approaching Kashiri, hitting her with a Force blast that would have knocked a frigate out of orbit. The blast caught the Avatar square in the chest and rocked her shoulders back at least a couple of centimeters. She paused almost noticeably before she took her next step. Ben staggered back, exhausted, and nearly fell before Vistara's hand clamped around his biceps. She pulled him to his feet and began to retreat, pulling him toward the cloud of steam still enveloping the Font of Power.
"So, Ben, what was that supposed to be?"
she asked.
"The power of the light side?"
"You didn't do much better," Ben replied. He pulled his arm free and stopped a few meters outside the steam.
"And you were drawing on the font."
"Yeah, because I'd kind of like to survive this,"
Vistara replied, reluctantly stopping with him.
"What's your point?"
"That we don't have to surrender to her,"
Ben whispered. He glanced across the courtyard toward the ruined arcade, then used the Force to lift a section of broken pillar and bring it spinning toward the back of the Avatar's head.
"We just have to work together."
There was no time for Vistara to waste with a witty reply. She simply raised her hands and unleashed another fork of Force lightning, this one far less powerful than when she had been drawing on the font's power. The Kashiri's hand rose so fast that Ben barely even saw it move, and he realized their ploy could actually work, that even an Avatar could fall prey to a tactical diversion. The Kashiri caught the lightning bolt in the palm of her hand, and its white-hot energy dwindled to a spark. But the pillar kept coming, striking the back of her head with a sickening thud, and sending a bloody spray of skull and brain all the way across the courtyard to splatter Ben and Vistara's legs. The Avatar did not instantly drop dead. She staggered a few steps forward, carried by the momentum of the impact, then raised her smashed head to reveal that one eye had been knocked free of the socket and was now dangling on her cheek. The other eye fixed its gaze on Ben.
"Sheikah, Ben!"
Vistara took a step away from him, not because she was abandoning him, Ben felt sure, but because it was the smart tactical move.
"I think you really made her mad."
"Let's make her even madder," Ben said, reaching out for another section of pillar. "Hit her again!"
The order came to a strangled end as he felt himself flying back into the arcade. His shoulders hit a pillar dead center, folding so far backward that both shoulder blades touched stone.
Then a tremendous crack sounded inside his skull, and his head exploded into dark pain. He felt himself sliding down the pillar toward the cobblestones below, and the last thing he saw was Vistara retreating toward the Font of Power, disappearing into the yellow steam with the Avatar close behind. Abeloth lay tangled in Luke's arms, a writhing mass of force energy that had suddenly gone limp a second or a day ago, only to explode an hour or a nanosecond later into a flailing tempest that had sent them all rolling and bouncing across the Lake of Apparitions' dark waters. The stranger was tumbling with them, his hand still buried in Abeloth's chest, now wailing in agony as gleaming black force energy steamed from his wounds. They bounced so close to the shore, Luke grew worried that Abeloth was trying to carry them away from the lake into some new place beyond shadows. And then what? His back hit the water again, and he spun them all around so that his feet were toward the shore. He planted his feet against a moss hummock and kicked off and sent them all somersaulting back toward the center of the lake. Abeloth stopped struggling and seemed to shrink in his arms, and Luke dared to think that maybe, just maybe, she had finally lost hope, that they had exhausted her to the point that she was no longer capable of fighting. Then she was gone, leaving the stranger and Luke with nothing between them but 20 centimeters of space and the stump of the Sith's hand, now pointed at Luke's chest and still drawing force energy, draining it not from Abeloth now, but directly from Luke. They stayed like that for an eternity, a void of cold nothingness growing inside Luke as the stranger continued to hang in the air above, draining him. It seemed to Luke that the Sith's betrayal was premature, that they at least ought to make certain Abeloth was truly dead before they turned to fighting each other. But that was not the way Sith did things. Luke started to bring his hand up, intending to hit the stranger with a force blast, but before he could loose it, the Sith's feet dropped to the water's surface, and he raised his stump and pointed toward the far end of the lake.
There!
Luke craned his neck and saw Abeloth's silhouette backing into the mists of forgetfulness, with the stranger's wrist still protruding from her chest.
Stop her! Luke yelled. If she disappears into that fog...
Luke left the sentence unfinished as a fountain of oily black force energy erupted from the protruding wrist. Abeloth's mouth gaped open, and her piercing shriek broke over the lake, reverberating across the water like a clap of thunder. Luke glanced over and saw the stranger standing beside him, pointing in her direction, using the force to draw his missing hand back toward its stump. Abeloth did not come dancing in to counterattack, did not even try to stand off defensively and weaken them with a blast of force lightning. She did not have time for such tactics. Luke doubted she would have fled the battle in the first place if she were not already dying, and with her force essence gushing out of her like a geyser, she had to attack now. And she did. In the next thought, Abeloth was simply there in front of the stranger, driving a ball of tentacles deep into him. Luke sprang forward to help and felt a blistering iciness slide deep into his own chest. His entire right side flared into cold anguish, and the tentacles began to dig and grab, tearing him apart inside in a way no lightsaber or blaster ever could. Luke attacked anyway, driving an elbow strike into the side of her head. As before, there was no crunching, no physical sense of impact, only force energy plowing through force energy, sending waves of pain and damage rolling through them both. Luke sensed his elbow come free as it pushed out the other side of Abeloth's head. Then she simply fell away, her still bald tentacles tearing free of both Luke and the stranger, each clutching a handful of dripping, pulsing force essence. The stranger collapsed, with a gaping hole in his chest. Luke felt his own form grow limp and weak, and he sensed his mouth falling open to scream. Then his whole body was falling, weak and aching for breath. Jaina had heard death screams many times before, on battlefields from Anthus to Zaleba, and they had one thing in common. Death screams always contained as much surprise as pain, as much anger and disbelief as sorrow.
It was as though men meeting a violent end could never quite believe what was happening, that they had finally met a fighter who was better and luckier than they were. Or maybe it was death itself they were cursing, angry at how it preferred to cheat great warriors of their lives rather than take them in a fair fight. Jaina couldn't be sure of the feelings behind the scream, but she knew one thing for certain. A death scream was always raw and loud. And that was the kind of scream she had just heard from the Rude Awakening's medbay, where Luke had strapped in his body before he went beyond shadows. But with black holes reaching out from both sides, and ships still holding the choke point with a steady assault of boulders and plasma, leaving the pilot's seat to go check on him was out of the question. The Awakening's shields had long ago failed, and she had so many weak spots in her bow armor that Jaina was seriously considering spinning the ship around to start taking damage in the stern. She had been fighting back, of course, using a steady onslaught of Baradium missiles against ship. Her goal was to hold on long enough so Luke could return from beyond shadows. By then, she hoped the Awakening would be far enough through the choke point to force its way through with one last shot. But Luke's scream had shown her the folly of her patient approach. She needed to finish this fast and to get to Abeloth's planet. Jaina checked the missile magazine. 3 left. She launched 2, a single second apart, then hit the throttles and accelerated after them. This time, it would be Ship who had to decide how crazy the other pilot was. By the time Saba reached the airlock at the entrance of the computer core, the Shadow Ghouls were barely shadows anymore. Their eyes had paled to white, and they moved so slowly that it was easy to dance past and close the eyes of their corpses. And even when one of them did make contact, there was no life-draining or pain. Just a sudden cold ache that passed as quickly as the ghoul was destroyed. Clearly, Master Skywalker had robbed Abeloth of much of her strength. But Saba feared that he had also been greatly weakened, for she had not sensed him reaching out to let her know of his success, to warn her that Abeloth would now be desperate and looking to escape. Saba paused in front of the airlock and reached for him in the Force. But there was nothing. No hint of whether he was relieved or in pain, whether he had destroyed Abeloth or not. Tahiri came up behind her and said,
"That was almost too easy."
Her voice was trembling with exhaustion, but there was no pain in it, only the joy of returning to the hunt with her true pack.
"Are you thinking trap?"
"This one is always thinking trap," Saba said. "It is the best way to hunt."
"Not what I meant," Tahiri replied. "I don't like how that fight suddenly got easier. Abeloth is up to something."
"So are we,"
Olazon said, limping up to join them, and wisely cutting short any discussion of tactics. The pack had planned this part of the attack before drafting Tahiri to join them, and it would not be wise to explain their intentions where Abeloth could be eavesdropping.
"And if you call that easy, we could use a few Jedi in the Void Jumpers."
As Olazon spoke, he pulled a bell-shaped explosive from his gear bag and affixed it to the center of the airlock's outer hatch. Saba could see dozens of dark splotches on his arms and body, areas of dead tissue where the ghouls had touched him and his flesh was no longer emitting normal heat. She knew that if he lived, he would spend the next few weeks inside a Bacta tank, trying to replace the flesh the medroids were going to have to cut away. Once he had set the timer, Olazon asked,
"Anyone have a detonator left?"
Saba pulled one off her combat harness and passed it to Tahiri.
"Jedi Vela has one."
"I do now."
Tahiri frowned up at Saba, then turned to Olazon.
"Set a 1-second fuse and float it in?"
Olazon smiled.
"Done this before, I see."
"A few times," Tahiri said, clearly understating the case.
Olazon nodded, then turned to Stomper 2, who was still carrying the shiny, badly dented orb of the EMP bomb.
"You ready?"
"Be blind or armed. Safety's off," the Void Jumper reported. "I'll start the detonation timer when Jedi Vela blows the inner hatch."
"Good."
Olazon flipped the fuse toggle on the first charge, then spun away from the hatch and pressed himself flat against the wall at the end of the corridor.
"Fire in the hole!"
Everyone else did the same, Stomper 2 going to Olazon's side of the corridor, and Saba and Tahiri to the opposite side.
"Master Sebatine," Tahiri asked, What's the rest of our...
The word plan vanished into a deafening bang. A slender cone of blowback flame shot 5 meters down the corridor, but most of the blast power was focused in the opposite direction. The entire hatch buckled inward, filling the interior of the airlock with a cloud of durasteel shrapnel. The flames had barely died away before Tahiri rolled away from the wall and used the force to send the thermal detonator floating toward the inner hatch. A second later, a white flash flared from inside the airlock. Saba was around Tahiri and through the hatchway even before the baradium glow had faded. Leaping across a 3-meter hole that the detonator had left in the floor, she landed on a transparasteel service balcony inside the computer core. The balcony protruded about a dozen meters into a vast spherical cavity filled with the faint pink striations of energy-starved circuits. Scattered around the chamber were a handful of drifting radiant clouds, the tiniest amount of memory that an energy-starved computer needed to keep active to avoid shutting down. Flying toward Saba from the depths of the chamber was a cloud of white-hot radiance, shaped like a woman's face, but with a hugely broad mouth and eyes so sunken they looked like wells. As the cloud approached, tendrils of light began to reach out in front of it, stretching toward Saba. Tahiri alighted at Saba's side. "Stomper 2!" she yelled. "Big Blinder, now!"
"Stay here!"
Saba ordered, stepping away from Tahiri toward the banks of display screens and interface consoles at the front of the balcony.
"Protect Big Blinder."
"Master 17, wait!" Tahiri called. "She's just energy. You need the pulse bomb to kill her."
Holding her lightsaber at waist height, inactivated and out of position, Saba ignored the warning and continued forward. What Tahiri didn't know was that Abeloth could see the future. And that meant they had to use the future to defeat her. That was why Olazan had sacrificed so much to bring the pulse bomb along, so that Abeloth would foresee it destroying the computer core with her inside. What the prey hadn't seen was how Saba intended to react when Abeloth tried to change the future. Or at least Saba hoped Abeloth hadn't seen that. By the time the cloud of radiance reached the front edge of the service balcony, the tendrils of light had solidified into fleshy tentacles, and Abeloth's face had lost its luminous quality and started to grow opaque. Still holding her lightsaber down by her waist, Saba force-sprang into the air. The tentacles immediately stretched toward her, already pulsing with the dark force essence that Abeloth intended to pump into Saba. That she needed to pump into Saba if she was to take a new avatar and escape to recover from the wounds that she had already suffered in the maw. They were still 2 meters apart when the first tentacle touched Saba's face. Then her entire head was webbed in tentacles. They were trying to push in everywhere, into her nostrils and her eyes and her mouth, tapping against the tympanic membranes that covered her ear canals, even trying to slip up beneath her scales. Saba ignited her lightsaber and brought it sweeping up, cutting all of the tentacles away at Abeloth's shoulder. Expecting a geyser of Abeloth's force essence to come spraying out of the wounds, she immediately sealed the membranes that protected her eyes and nostrils. But the heat of her blade seemed to cauterize the wounds, and all that happened was the tentacles flew off in every direction. There was an instant of stunned silence. Then Abeloth released an ear-piercing shriek of pain and rage. In the next millisecond, they both slammed down atop an interface console. Saba felt metal buckling and clear plast shattering. Then they tumbled off on opposite sides, Saba hitting the deck near Tahiri and Abeloth landing on her feet by the balcony's edge. Fearing that her prey would attempt to retreat into the computer core, Saba grabbed at Abeloth in the force, at the same time slashing her lightsaber through the console that separated them. The blade suddenly died. For an instant, Saba thought the pulse bomb had detonated early. She cursed her pack's lack of faith in her skill, but then Abeloth was racing toward her, coming in faster than she was being pulled, and Saba realized that her prey had extinguished the blade. Even with no arms left to fight with, Abeloth remained determined to take Saba's body. Her huge mouth gaped open, revealing 2 rows of fangs. Fangs sharp enough to shred blast armor, set in jaws wide enough to bite through a rancor neck. That was no way to fight a Barabel. Saba brought both fists up together, jamming them into Abeloth's mouth in a force-enhanced double punch. The blow knocked a 10-centimeter hole through both sets of fangs, and when Abeloth bit down, there was nothing but toothless gum clamping Saba's scaly forearms. Still, the pain was excruciating, and Saba came close to stopping before she felt her forearm snapping. Hissing in pain, she balled her fists anyway, locking her talons deep into the back of Abeloth's throat. In one smooth jerk, she pulled her prey's head down sideways and exposed the neck. Then Saba sank her fangs in deep. They sliced through skin and gristle and just kept sinking, cutting through muscle and bone and spinal cord. Abeloth's body went limp with shock. Saba used her broken arms to jerk the head down farther, exposing even more neck. She ripped flesh. She gnashed sinew. She crushed vertebrae. She whipped her muzzle back and forth, and she felt the prey's head pop loose. Only then did Abeloth's jaw open and release Saba's broken arms. She let her hands open, and her claws slipped free. The head went flying across the balcony and landed at the feet of Tahiri and the two void jumpers. All three stared at the gruesome thing in open shock, until Tahiri finally seemed to recover her wits and looked toward Saba.
Master Sabatine?
She gasped.
Is she... Did you get her?
Yes, Jedi Vela,
Saba said, struggling to her feet.
Now we have both killed an Abeloth.
Ben's brain was so muddled, and his vision so blurry, that at first he took the flickering blue ball to be a sun about to go nova. Next, he thought it might be the efflux nozzle of a departing starship. Then he noticed the arch of a stone arcade before him, and the cobblestone courtyard all around him, and he recalled that he was on a planet somewhere in the Maw. He had been taken there about a Sith meditation sphere named Ship, at the command of a being called Abeloth. His eyes went back to the column of yellow fog at the heart of the courtyard. That was the source of the flashing. There was a ball of blue energy dancing inside it, crackling and drifting back and forth. And there was a voice, too. A familiar female voice, calling his name.
Ben!
Bastar Kai's voice.
Ben!
His girlfriend's voice.
Ben, where are you?
She sounded terrified.
Ben! I need you!
Her voice began to quaver.
Ben, don't give up me!
She was panting for breath.
Please, not... Don't let this...
Ben sprang to his feet. His head began to throb so hard he thought it would split, and he felt warm blood cascading down the back of his neck. He staggered forward anyway, and nearly vomited when he entered the yellow cloud and took his first breath of acrid steam. The blue ball was dancing toward him now. As it drew closer, he could see that the glow was being caused by a crackling cage of force lightning. Inside the cage, two figures were locked in hand-to-tentacle combat. One a beautiful young woman with brown eyes, the other a hideously battered thing with a mass of smashed skull and spilled brains. It looked as though a Kashyyyri had grown tentacles and stepped into a threshing machine. The beautiful young woman, Vistara, was blasting away with a constant stream of force lightning, trying to use it to hold her attacker at bay. The Kashyyyri mess was grasping at her with two sets of armed tentacles, using one set to keep them bound together, while the other set probed at her mouth and nostrils. Protruding from a small scabbard on the Kashyyyri's belt was the handle of a glass dagger. Ben recognized it as one of the favorite weapons of the Lost Tribe of Sith, a thin glass stiletto known as a shikar. Ben did not even hesitate. He used the force to pluck the shikar from its scabbard, then drove the tip up through the center of the Kashyyyri's back, angling the blade so that it passed through her spinal cord straight into her heart. A spray of dark blood erupted around the shikar's handle, and the Kashyyyri collapsed to her knees, and then threw her smashed head back and let loose with an eerie wail. Her tentacles slid free of Vistara and started to swing around toward her back. Ben used the force to snap off the shikar's handle. Vistara hit the Kashiri in the face with a blast of force lightning. The Kashiri toppled over backward and lay writhing, apparently helpless, but somehow still alive. Ben used the force to drag her out of the yellow fog, away from the font of power, and out into the light of the planet's bright blue sun. The Kashiri stopped struggling, and her eyes grew vacant and glassy. Her tentacles fused back into arms, then her entire body went slack. Ben used the force to summon the pillar fragment that he had used to smash her skull earlier, and dropped it across her chest. He heard bones snapping and air fluttering from her lungs. But no screams or groans or half-heard wails to suggest the woman was anything but dead. Then Vistara stepped out of the yellow fog. Her face was wild, and the font's dark power was swirling around her legs so thickly that it looked as though she were floating on a black cloud. She raised her hands and pointed them at the corpse. Clearly, she intended to hit it with another blast of force lightning, to burn it to a crisp and destroy every last trace of the thing that had tried to take them.
No, Vistara!
Ben quickly stepped to her side and placed a hand across her wrists, then gently forced her arms down.
There's no need for that. We're done with her now.
Ship hung in the exit to the choke point, a small dark spot silhouetted against a blue giant sun. Jaina knew her opponent had to be as battered as the Rude Awakening. It had stopped returning fire after she had hit it with a double Baradium strike and driven it out in the narrows. But it had refused to give up entirely, always remaining just close enough to remain a threat, to make one last suicide run and take them both out. Unfortunately, the shock waves had taken a toll on the Awakening herself. She had at least 3 hull breaches, and Jaina had been forced to close her helmet and seal the medbay cabin where Luke lay strapped into a bunk. Now she truly had only one way to save him, assuming that was still possible. She had to set down on a planet with an atmosphere, and this deep in the maw, that meant Abeloth's own world. Jaina fired the last Baradium missile, then praying that the Awakening could take one more battering, she accelerated after it, and watched in disbelief as the distant dot suddenly began to shrink and vanished into nothingness. Finally, ship had turned and run.
Chapter 33.
The Lake of Apparitions was neither warm nor cold, still nor roiling. It simply was, beyond time and sensation. Beyond fear or desire or duty, it embodied surrender and attainment, death and immortality, and Luke had never felt more ready to slip below its dark surface and join his beloved Mara, to wrap himself in her liquid embrace and let the depths of eternity wash away the anguish of his wounds, the ache of his lonely despair. But something would not let him sink. He lay on the water for a year, or a minute, hurt and exhausted, watching Abeloth's pale form vanish. Her eyes were empty and dark. Her tentacles curled into loose balls. Her golden hair was fanned about her head in a floating halo, and she did not seem to be sinking so much as merely shrinking. Luke continued to watch as she dwindled to the size of a thigh, a foot, a finger, then a mere sliver that seemed to hang below him, wavering and flickering, before it finally slipped from sight. And still, Luke did not sink. He was too weak to rise, and he could feel nothing of himself except the aching void Abeloth had torn in his chest. It occurred to him that he might well be dying, and it was not a thought that brought him any fear. Even if his life had not been as long as Yoda's, it had been a good one, filled with close friends and much-loved family. He had been of some small service, at least, to his fellow sentient beings. And in the new Jedi Order, he had rekindled a light that had once gone out in the galaxy. He had few regrets for anything he had done. And if the time had come to let another Jedi carry the torch, he was ready.
Not yet, Skywalker.
The voice was warm and familiar, and it came from beside Luke. He turned to find Mara's face breaking the surface of the water.
Then he saw a hand gripping the back of his biceps and realized that she was floating beneath him, preventing him from sinking.
Mara, it's okay, Luke said. I'm ready. I want to be with you. Too bad.
He felt his upper body rising as she tried to push him upward.
I don't want to be with you. Not here. Not yet.
What?
Luke asked, feeling more confused than resentful.
Mara, I'm wounded. Badly. Aboloth took something out of me. She wounded him, too.
Mara's other hand rose out of the water and pointed past Luke's head toward the tattooed Sith who had helped Luke kill Aboloth. The stranger was on his feet, limping toward the far shore with both hands clutched to his chest.
If he can do it, so can you.
Luke forced himself to sit upright. The effort made his head spin and his whole being ache, but he refused to collapse back into the water. He had no idea of the Sith's true identity, but it did not seem wise to let him return to the physical galaxy alone.
That's ridiculous. Their injuries may be different.
This voice came from Luke's other side, sinister and cajoling, and also familiar.
Besides, Sith are stronger. They have the dark side.
Who is he?
Luke asked, turning to find Jason looking up from the water on his other side.
You know, don't you?
I told you,
Jason replied.
He's the one I saw sitting on the throne of Balance. The dark man of your vision?
Luke asked. This was the best opportunity he would ever have to learn for certain why Jason had turned to the dark side, and he was determined to take advantage of it.
The one you sacrificed yourself to stop?
I saw only one, and you're letting him win.
Luke shook his head.
He can't win, Jason. Whatever damage you caused the Force, you accomplished that much. The Sith will never rule the galaxy. Not now.
The tattooed man stopped and whirled, and Luke found himself preparing to dodge a fork of Force lightning. But the stranger was in no better shape to fight than Luke. He had a gaping wound in his chest, just like Luke. And Luke could see that his entire form was shuddering. Instead of attacking, the Sith just stood staring at them, one eye shining yellow and the other an empty socket, his right arm a useless ghost of a limb. Then, after an eternity that might have been a mere second, he said,
You must not be so certain of yourself, Master Skywalker. You may think you have stopped the Sith, but you know nothing of us. Nothing at all.
I know that Jason changed the future, Luke retorted. And you know it too, or you wouldn't have been here to help me fight Aboloth.
The stranger dipped his chin in acknowledgement.
There is that,
he said.
But can you be sure the change will last? Perhaps Kylus did not change the future. Perhaps he only delayed it.
Luke felt his energy and his determination come rushing back.
I guess that remains to be seen, doesn't it?
A slow grin crept across the stranger's mouth.
Indeed it does.
He turned and began to limp away.
And we shall see, Master Skywalker. I promise you that.
Luke returned to his feet and stood watching until the stranger finally stepped onto the shore and vanished. The man was barely gone before Jason spoke again, this time from the water in front of Luke.
What does Aboloth have to do with this?
Jason asked.
She wasn't part of my vision.
Luke studied his nephew's bitter face, debating how much he should reveal about what Raynar had learned from the root, whether it would be justice or cruelty to let Jason know that he bore personal responsibility for an apocalypse.
As I thought, Jason sneered. You're as much a liar as I am.
Luke shook his head.
I'm not a liar, Jason. You are the one who released Aboloth.
Me?
Jason's tone was snide, but Luke could see the shock in his eyes. He truly did not understand what he had done.
How?
Luke shook his head.
I'm not sure I should tell you, he said.
It would do no good.
You expect me to believe you're protecting me? Truly? Because I assure you, I can handle the truth.
All right, Luke said. Jason had already guessed what had happened, and it would only be cruel to leave him wondering if he had guessed right.
But first you must answer a question that's been bothering me.
I might.
It doesn't hurt to ask.
Sometimes it does, Luke said. He squatted down, then looked straight into Jason's dead eyes.
I want to know why you didn't come to me. About my vision?
Jason asked.
About any of it?
For a while I thought it was because I was the dark man you saw on the throne of balance, that you were trying to take my place. Luke gestured toward the shore where the stranger had disappeared.
But if the Sith is the one you saw, that makes no sense. You didn't have to confront this alone. We could have done it together.
No, we couldn't,
Jason said, shaking his head.
Because the Dark Man had nothing to do with my decision.
Luke frowned.
Then what did? It was who I saw standing with the Dark Man.
Jason's gaze shifted away, and his expression grew at once very determined and very sad.
I saw Alana.
Chapter 34.
The assault pinnace Rude Awakening sat at the far end of the courtyard, hissing and popping as the heat of its fiery descent dissipated into the humid jungle air. Its hull was carbon scorched and dented, and several deep pits went down through the thick battle armor all the way to the orange circle of an emergency hull patch. The assault vessel had obviously been through a terrible battle, no doubt with ship, which Abeloth had sent back into space the instant she had debarked with her two prisoners. Ben could only hope that the ancient meditation sphere had suffered as much damage as the Awakening, because otherwise they would be an easy target when they tried to leave the planet.
What's taking so long?
Vistara asked. She was standing at Ben's side, one hand tight on his biceps and holding him steady.
Can't your people see that you need medical attention?
Ben glanced over. His vision was still a bit blurry, but with a purple bruise around her throat and a face covered in welts and cuts, she didn't look much better than he felt.
We both need medical attention, Ben said. You look like you stepped on a Hutt's tail.
Thanks a lot,
Vistara said.
Next time I won't mess my hair saving you.
Ben cocked his brow.
Didn't I save you?
He asked.
That's the way I remember it.
Vistara filled her voice with mock concern.
Poor Ben. You must have hit your head harder than I thought.
Pulling him along by the arm, she started across the courtyard.
We need to get you into a med bay. Now.
They had covered about half the distance when a dark rectangle separated from the pinnace's battered hull and began to descend, slowly folding out into a boarding ramp. The slender female figure appeared in the opening at the top. Her brown hair was pulled into a tight bun. Her eyes were sunken with exhaustion, and she had furrow lines as deep as canyons in her brow. So it took Ben a moment to even recognize her as his cousin, Jaina Solo. She was dressed in a combat vac suit and holding her deactivated lightsaber in one hand. And the entire front panel of her suit was smeared in red, frothy blood.
Jaina!
Ben rushed forward, weaving slightly as he pulled Vistara along.
Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Jaina's gaze shifted toward Vistara, and her entire body grew tense and alert.
How about you, Ben? Ben took a blow to the head,
Vistara said, steadying Ben as he stumbled.
He's lost a lot of blood, and is having a few balance problems.
Jaina's eyes returned to Ben, and this time there was as much concern in them as wariness.
You better come aboard, then.
Ben and Vistara crossed the last few steps to the pinnace. Then Jaina raised a palm to stop Vistara from stepping onto the boarding ramp.
Just Ben for now, she said. Please.
The force grew cool and still with the tension between the two women. and Ben and Vistara stopped at the base of the ramp. Ben frowned and looked from Vistara to Jaina, trying to figure out why the pair had suddenly grown so wary of each other. Then Vistara lowered the hand she had been using to support him, creating a chain of eddies in the dark aura that continued to cling to her, and he understood. He took Vistara's hand and started to pull her up the boarding ramp with him.
"You don't need to worry about that dark stuff, Jaina," Ben said. "It's just an after effect."
Jaina moved the hand holding her lightsaber to the waist-high ready position.
"Of what, exactly?" "I was standing too close to the font when I used the Force,"
Vistara explained.
"I knew it would taint me, but we needed its power. It was the only way to kill Abeloth."
"But the taint will fade," Ben said. "It's already faded a lot."
"I'm glad to hear it."
Jaina did not take her eyes off Vistara.
"But it's actually your father I'm thinking of, Ben."
"Dad?"
Ben started up the ramp, so shocked that he was still holding Vistara's hand.
"What happened?"
"I don't really know."